Game three is tonight in Florida, with the Panthers badly in need of a win, down 2-0 to the Vegas Golden Knights. That's where we go right now, where we welcome Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey insider. As always, a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. How you doing this morning, MJ?
Good morning, guys. I am here. It's sunny and clear and clear skies. I hope everyone's doing okay up there, because that's tracking this from afar. It seems a pretty scary situation with the fires and the air quality. So everyone's doing all right. But yeah, we're getting ready for game three. And you know, this is the series. If Florida loses tonight, it will be over. They won't come back from 3-0 down. So you'd expect their absolute, very desperate best tonight. Trying to get back in the series for sure.
I know both teams got out on the ice yesterday a little bit, but at this point, even with an extra day off, is it just the guys getting out to stretch the legs a little bit? I mean, nobody's practicing in earnest at this point, are they?
No, it is a sort of a function of moving your body around and getting loose and staying kind of trying to stay sharp physically. Gudas was not on the ice, although there does seem to be some optimism around the Florida team that he will play tonight, which would be something given what happened to him in game two. So they're hopeful for that. Ekblad didn't practice, but the assumption is he will play. So it's just, you're not practicing and you're not really learning anything. Like, a lot's been written about and talked about Florida, not just their discipline, but they're in, you know, their trouble with their defensive reads and their defensive assignments. And it's not like they're out there doing 3-on-3 rush coverage. You know, like, they're just like, they're doing some flow drills and getting off there. So they just have to execute better. They're not really being taught or practicing anything different. They just got to figure out how to do it better than they've done it so far.
Has anything really changed, MJ? Because in the three series, Bobrovsky, on one hand, we say stood on his head. Those were high volume, high quality chances. Is it quite simply that they're just not getting the saves, or is there something that drastically different in the way they're playing?
So, I mean, you can simplify it and boil it down there. That's a big part of it. You know, pucks that he otherwise would stop, the level he was playing at previously, you know, he's just not playing at right now. And yes, Vegas deserves credit for that, but much of that is just, it's just not happening. Now, the likelihood of him being a 960 goaltender in the final was unlikely, even though he did it for two rounds in a row. But the other part of it is, I do think that both Carolina and Toronto specifically were not as physically capable of dealing with what Florida does well, which is get in on the forecheck and get and win the front of the net. And Vegas is better at that than Toronto and better at that than Carolina. So Florida had a hard time getting to those spots and defending those spots like they did against those other teams. So that's probably been the big difference, along with the drop in the goaltending for Sergei Bobrovsky.
I'm watching. I've watched Barkov throughout the playoffs, and you know he's playing good, really good two way hockey. One of the best. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody has called him for so many years the most underrated player in hockey. I don't think he can be underrated any longer. But it doesn't seem like from an offensive point of view, there's as much as maybe there should be or has to be, I guess, for Florida to win. Is that a fair assessment of his play?
Yeah, I think so, because, you know, he has to be more than just a good checker, a good two-way guy. For them to win, he's got to score some goals. And when you watch him play, like, you appreciate all the things he does very well. I mean, he's an exceptional player, but it feels like he is almost too deferential offensively. Like, I'd be watching, and I turn to the colleagues, I'm like, just, he's got to just take the puck to the net. He's got to take that shot. He's too big and too strong and too good to sort of always be looking to pass it off and find someone else to put in the net. I would be encouraging him, like, take it to the net, shoot it on the net. You are as capable of scoring goals as anybody that you're playing with. So just, you know, take it on yourself a little bit more. And if he does that, I think he would be better off. But again, you also need to appreciate the job that Vegas is doing defensively on him. It's hard. Vegas is a good defensive team for a reason. They protect the front of the net, and their big bodies, they make it difficult to get to those high danger areas, and it's been hard for kind of everybody on Florida to get there.
From Vegas' standpoint, from ownership to management to coaches to players, some were here last time they went to the finals against Washington, but just overall for the group, MJ, I assume this is not a group that's going to take this lightly, that there is a real sense of urgency to understand these opportunities don't come along very often and take advantage and come out hard tonight.
You're exactly right. This is maybe the biggest difference between 2018 and this year for Vegas, because a little bit of then was they're happy to be there, and it was such a miracle Cinderella run that they won the first game and sort of lost the next four, got away from them. Now they have all kinds of players that, whether it's Barbashev or Petrangelo or Stevenson or even Jonathan Quick, they have a whole bunch of guys who won the cup elsewhere, plus the six guys who've been there before, who absolutely, even after game one, Simmer, when you went in their room, when you talked to the guys, it was so matter of fact. Like, they were barely even happy. Like, it was just nothing. It was just like, whatever, we got more games to play. And so you're 100% right. I would expect, I would not expect them to have a bad game or be satisfied with where they're at and open the door. If Florida's going to win, Florida's going to have to play better. But the challenge is, and this would be an uncomfortable feeling, I've been on teams like this, where you feel as though it's not really in your hands, right? Like, it's like, even if you play well, it may not be enough because the other team's better. You don't want to have to count on the other team taking a step back, which might be the case for Florida tonight.
All right, well, here in Ottawa, with all due respect to the Stanley Cup Final, mm-hmm. it's all about Alex DeBrincat, and mm-hmm. I'm sure you've either seen or heard the news by now that Pierre LeBrun had last night that he and his agent have submitted a list of, quote, preferred destinations that he would be open, and by that meaning that he would be open to signing a long-term deal with, which would one would think, for Ottawa, does up the potential for a good return. So just when you heard the news, kind of what's your feel on it? Like, is Alex DeBrincat's time in Ottawa now done? Does it feel like that?
Not necessarily. I mean, you know, this could be just posturing in negotiations, right? If Alex DeBrincat is willing to sign in Ottawa, but only at the right number. You know, this is one way to push that number forward if you're going to go down that road. I don't think any hard feelings would be created yet, but if you take it at face value and he's not keen to sign an extension, regardless of the money, then yeah, your time is done. He's got the driver's seat, and I think Ottawa has recognized we're not going to let him walk for nothing. Probably better for our team if we can make a good trade before the season starts so we can have the long-term asset in our organization and in our system the entire season. It's a challenge, though, because if he's only willing to go to however many teams are on this list he's put forward, that really does narrow down the competition to get him. And they gave up like the seventh overall pick. So they're going to need a player back, and they don't probably want just a pick. They want a good young player, probably a good young defenseman if they could. So we'll see how this works, because Pierre Dorion's got to kind of make some magic happen with one of those teams that he's willing to sign an extension with. Not a great bargaining position for Dorion, but yeah, if you take it at face value, yeah, he doesn't want to sign there. If he doesn't want to sign there, then you got to trade him out of there.
Are you totally sold on Alex DeBrincat, a 5'7" scoring winger? I know he's very, very talented, MJ, but do you believe in an 8x8 or north of that, building your hockey team around that, if your goal is to win a Stanley Cup?
Well, I mean, that's the going rate. Cole Caulfield just did it, right?
Yeah.
8x8, and he's the same size with a less proven track record. DeBrincat's going to get you 30 in his sleep. In a bad year, he had 27 and 66 points, 2-time 40-goal scorer. Like, I guess, yeah, I'm okay. You can have him on your team at $8 million. Also, remember, Simmer, as you know, the cap is going to be $93 million in 3 years, right? So when you sign up to extension, $8 million won't feel quite as heavy on an $83 million cap as it could on a $93 million cap, which it's going to go to in short order. You just can't have too many players like him. That's the thing. Like, you know, you can have him on your team and he can be good on a winning team, but you have to have other bigger, different kind of players to go along with him. But Ottawa's a lot of guys, right? Like, they got a lot of guys now signed for $7 to $8 million. And if they add another one, it does start to lean a little top heavy, which one of the real problems for Ottawa last year was that their third and fourth line didn't really score. And as great as the first two lines were and how excellent their seasons were for most of them, they need more. They need to spread more talent throughout their lineup, and it gets harder and harder to do the more guys you pay $8 million to. So we'll see how this one shakes out. But I can have them on my team, absolutely.
Yeah.
You just can't. You just need other players that are not kind of one-dimensional offensive guys to go along with him.
You mentioned that you would look at, maybe in a perfect scenario for Ottawa, that they get a defenseman in return. It's funny because for the first time in a long time here in Ottawa, it feels like the defense, at least toward the top of the defense, is kind of settled a little bit. And we've been talking about, well, what is the ideal return for Ottawa in a DeBrincat trade, just in terms of, you know, not a specific player, but, and I said, look, for me, they got to get a one player, a similar kind of a goal scoring person. Simmer's more with, he would go with kind of more of a depth, a couple of middle six guys, you know, kind of spread the wealth a little bit. We also put out a scenario of solve the goalie situation. If there's a goalie trade to be made, get the goalie. And then the other option was a first and prospects, kind of a futures thing. We didn't even put defensemen on our list. So you think defenseman is still something that, you know, in a DeBrincat trade, you'd presumably get a really good defenseman. You think that that's something that they would still be looking at?
I mean, I think so, because they're oftentimes harder to find, right? Like, you know, Chikrin, as much as we're happy that, you know, Ottawa's happy to have him, he only has 2 years left on his contract, and who knows where he goes, how that conversation heads. They do have three left-shot defensemen. I know guys could play on their offside, but could you get a right-shot defenseman? Could you go get Damon Severson with some of that money, just as an example, because he happens to be a right-shot guy that came to mind? Could you go get Damon Severson or Ryan Graves or whoever and pay them $4 million and take that another $4 million and pick up a middle six forward or two or a goaltender and use that to pay for a goaltender that's a free agent? Is Jonas Korpisalo an answer? Is Freddie Anderson an answer? Like, cap space is worth a lot if you take different combinations. I do think, like, yes, they're set on defense, and yes, they need help up front, but I think for a trade of this magnitude, like, you know, middle six is Matthew Joseph a middle six winger? Do you don't want two more guys respectfully like him? You know, you can find those guys with other kind of transactions. Like, I think you want to get a really good player, even if he's a $4 or $5 million player, bank the extra money, pick, you know, maybe get some prospects there, and then you can find, I would think, middle six wingers to play with Shane Pinto on the third line. A little bit easier than you could find maybe a solid defenseman who's young and cost-controlled.
Yeah, you come up with so many scenarios. I pointed to kind of the Tuck for Krebs, and I mentioned on free agents a Barbashev and a Connor Brown, you know, certainly upgrades on Joseph. We'll see. I guess just overall, MJ, do you assume that there's a lot of interest? Because I do think when you give a list like this, I think if you're the team, okay, I understand you probably don't want to be in Canada. There's probably some other teams you don't want to be at. But if I can go out and canvas the market and find, like you said, a place like New Jersey that wants to give you a contract extension, pretty good chance I can convince you to go. But I guess I'm asking, do you think there is just a lot of teams that will be willing to not only trade for DeBrincat, but sign him to a long-term extension?
I think so. I think so. I mean, he's got a pretty proven track record at doing the hardest thing there is to do. So I think he'll have value around the league, depending what that extension is. I mean, I think the Cole Caulfield extension is a very tight blueprint of what he will get.
Yeah.
You know, probably a bit more than that. 8.25, something like that is a pretty reasonable, given what Caulfield just signed for, request for DeBrincat. I think there would be teams like that. And I just think the salary cap, if you're not up against it this year, then you're going to get breathing room. I mean, the cap's got to jump next year $3 or $4 million, and it will still be less than what it should be relative to revenue, because you can only jump so much as the way the CBA has the staggered rises. So, yeah, I think there will, and you're exactly right, Simmer. I'm not going to be guided solely by the list.
Yeah.
I'm taking them around the league. I'm like, listen, I know you didn't have Colorado on your team, on your list.
Yeah.
Why, like, you could go play with Nate MacKinnon. Like, that would be pretty great.
Yeah.
Why don't we explore what that could look like and then bring it back to him? And then also, I mean, like, you don't have to specifically, you know, let's say there's three teams on the list and they're all like, sorry, we can't. Then you can trade them to a team as a rental for 1 year and get, and, you know, just give me whatever the best return is, whatever's going to help myself, my team the most. That's where I'm taking them, and not really worry about what he wants. I'm just worried about what I want.
Now that there is apparently a list that Pierre Dorion has in his hand, is the better time to be trading DeBrincat now? You know, now, you know, leading up to the draft, in and around the draft, or if the value, you perceive the value to not quite be there, do you go into the rest of the summer, into next season at least? He's playing at that point, I guess, on his qualifying offer, but the clock is also ticking on July 1st of next year, when you get zero return if you haven't dealt him at that point.
Best time, I think, is before the draft, because teams have a lot of money to spend. The draft is when a lot of deals get made. And so if you're shaping your team and you want to get a free agent, you're thinking about doing it next week or whatever it is, the next 10 days before the draft takes place. So now is the time. Once July 1st goes by, you know, teams spend their money. The teams that are going to be near the cap will be right on the cap within a couple weeks of July 1st. So it becomes harder to absorb even whatever his qualifier is. Even if you take him to arbitration and you knock it down to $8 million, you know, it's going to be hard maybe to absorb that. So if you don't get it done early, then you might be forced to hold them till late. And the challenge is, what if Ottawa gets off to a great start? What if Ottawa's in fifth place in the conference at the trade deadline next year?
Right.
And DeBrincat's got 35 goals in 65 games, and they're clicking at 29% in the power play. You're like, okay, well, thanks for that, and we're going to make the playoffs for the first time in a while. We're going to pull him out of our lineup.
Right.
It's what you'd have to do. It's just harder to do then. So ideally, you would get this done. If he's not going to sign in Ottawa, you would have this trade executed before July 1st. Because this is when big transactions happen. It's a pretty big transaction.
And without giving them away, MJ, you got a real proud group here, a group that is focused. How much do you, to be quite honest, you just not want to have him around? And not that he's a bad guy, but hey, quite simply, he doesn't want to be here. What's that like for a locker room?
I don't think guys would hold it against them. You know what I mean? Like, guys are pretty tolerant of everyone's situation and you know, like, get this guy out of here. I can't believe he doesn't believe in what we're doing. Like, it's just, you know what? He's doing what's best for him.
Yeah.
Nobody gets too upset when someone is not in training camp, negotiating a new contract, if someone has to get traded because he wants one thing or another. You know, what is Brady going to say? How dare you want out of Canada? I don't know. Look at your brother. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Right? Like, you know this all too well. So I think they would love to have him around while he's around. And then when he's not ready, if he doesn't want to be back, then they'll look forward to whoever comes in his place. So I don't think the team would have a problem with it. But you don't want it to be a distraction because you know what? We're going to be talking about it the whole time. He's going to be thinking about it. It does get to be a bit of a sideshow. DJ Smith's going to be thinking about it, talking about it, or whoever's the head coach or whatever happens there. Sooner rather than later, if it's not going to work out, if you get the deal you want, you pull the trigger.
His post-season garbage bag day comments, sort of talked a little bit about, you know, he found it to be an adjustment, not the off-the-ice stuff, but the on-the-ice stuff, an adjustment playing here in Ottawa compared to the way that he was playing in Chicago. And obviously, not having Patrick Kane on your wing is a big part of that as well. But many people have pointed out that Ottawa, the way that Ottawa plays under DJ Smith compared to the way that he played in Chicago, Ottawa's more of a dump and chase, didn't fit his style. Like, can we put it down to as simple as that Alex DeBrincat perhaps doesn't feel like he's a fit under DJ Smith and under DJ Smith hockey and just doesn't want to play hockey for DJ Smith?
No, I would say no. I would say it's more a function of I don't want to play in Canada. You know what I mean? I think without putting words in his mouth. And the reality is, you know, if he signs for a 7-year deal, the likelihood that DJ Smith is coach for 7 years is zero, right? Like, he's not going to be there the whole time. So now he may talk about the fit. I would beg to differ a little bit. I mean, I think Ottawa tries to play a rush game. He played with Stützle at times to start the year, and like, that's what Tim Stützle is a rush player, one of the best in the league. So I don't know. And I think if you're as good as DeBrincat to be, and if you're a guy who wants to get paid $8.5 million, like, you have to be able to play in different systems, not just a wide open rush game with Patrick Kane where you don't worry about defense. Like, you've got to be able to do different things than just that. So, I'm not going to give him that out at all. I'm going to say, he had a bit of an off year. I think it was largely shooting percentage driven, some of it power play driven. And not so much system or coach or city or any of that stuff. And he'll be back to scoring 35 next year. But, it's more just a business decision that he doesn't, or a life decision. He doesn't want to be in Ottawa. I don't think it's the coach or the system.
Yeah, those coaches and player stuff is a bunch of BS, MJ. I watched all the games last year. Can we also just agree he wasn't very good? His pace in the second half of the season was not there. Like, I don't care about all the stats and all the other stuff. I watched the whole season. He wasn't a $9 million hockey player last year.
No, he wasn't. He wasn't. Now, he's been a $9 million player previously career, but just not last year. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I would say, and Tim, I don't know where you come down on this. Maybe goalies are a bit different, but this idea, it was a difficult transition. I'm like, what are you talking about? And I say this not just to DeBrincat, to everyone. Like, it's hockey. There's only so many ways to play. Like, it's, nothing is that confusing out on the ice. Now, you could say it was a difficult transition because our team's not as good, or because I don't have Patrick Kane on it. Okay, I get that. But like, anyone who tells me that it takes more than 2 weeks to get comfortable in a system, like, I just, maybe I was just my head in the clouds. I didn't pay attention to the system, but I don't get it.
Yeah.
Because nothing is that complex when it comes to playing hockey. So maybe the fit was different, but the system and everything else should have been dealt with by the end of training camp. So, you know, just an off year, maybe. And the other part of it is, and I think you could look at Jonathan Huberdeau as an example of this. When you are traded from a position you are really comfortable in, that you don't think you're going to get traded from. And I imagine DeBrincat would have thought that in Chicago, even though they're rebuilding. I mean, he's 25 years old. Like, you probably would want to rebuild with a guy like him in his mind. That can leave a lasting mark. That can take a little while to get over emotionally. And I wonder if Huberdeau in Florida, or from Florida to Calgary, had an issue with that. I wonder if DeBrincat coming into Ottawa, that sort of wounding that you feel from getting traded from a situation you thought you were going to stay in for a long time, that can stay with you a lot longer than, oh boy, what am I doing on this forecheck, should ever take you.
And do you think long-term that this might be a favor to the Auto Centers? Because I do get a bit of a Matt Duchene feel. I think he'll be a better player. But, yeah, quite simply, you know, with Bobby Ryan, I saw early on, this isn't going to work. They extended him. Duchene didn't want to extend. In this particular case, not as I said, but ultimately, if a guy doesn't want to be here and it's not feeling right, if all of a sudden he did extend, that in a crazy way, maybe you're avoiding a mistake.
It's not that crazy, Simmer. It's not that outrageous because, you know, you made the big trade. You feel compelled to keep them. You feel compelled to show that you can pay that amount of money. Is that the best thing long term? Maybe he's forcing you, without ever acknowledging that you made a mistake at the first trade, to get out of that without hurting your team by getting a contract you don't want to have. Yeah, it could absolutely play out that way. Doesn't mean that he's not a good player, but for the fit, for the money, for where Ottawa is right now, you know, they might be better off going in a different way with a different option and spending that money elsewhere on a team that's pretty good. Like, Ottawa looks like they're pretty close. So money's going to get tight all of a sudden, and they can't make $9 million mistakes. And so maybe this is, for the fit, might be saving them from doing that.
All right, last one for you. You know, maybe the teams on the preferred destinations list will get leaked out at some point. I kind of look at it and I go, again, without knowing what's on the list, and go, what would be a team that could use Alex DeBrincat? And to me, Carolina goes right to the top of the list, given how their season ended, the fact they had so much trouble scoring. Who knows what's going to happen with Pacioretty. They've got some nicer, kind of maybe some younger players that aren't prospects, but are ready to you know. Like, is Carolina a realistic option in your mind for a trade for DeBrincat?
Need, yes. The way Carolina plays, though, they play with a ton of pace, right? Like, and they are very much a system-driven team. Like, you got to be able to skate and skate and skate to play for Carolina. That would be the only concern.
Right.
Now, what he does well, like Max Pacioretty is a bigger, faster, older version of DeBrincat, right? Like, kind of a high-end scorer. But, yeah, that would make sense for something like that. You know, other than that, you know, you look at teams that maybe are trying to ascend, Columbus, Detroit, to have some money, could use some scoring, want some skill, back to Chicago. Like, those kind of teams all would fit. Now, I don't know if they want to do that, but
Carolina
has the need.
I threw Pittsburgh out there.
Yeah, listen, Pitt's not, because Pitt's going to lose Jason Zucker, who makes $5 million. They're going to have a little bit of space, and they're committed to this path, right?
Yep.
Now, I don't know what Kyle Dubas thinks of this, but they're committed to this path of with this group. I can't imagine they're going to pay him $8 million of $9 million. You imagine paying him more than Sidney Crosby? I mean, like, you know, at some point, like, that's going to be a tough sell.
Yeah, good point by you. He'll make $8.699 million per season on a new contract.
And $12.
Yes,
and 12
exactly.
Cents or whatever.
All right, sounds good. Enjoy game three tonight. Really appreciate the time and the insight. Look forward to talking to you again next week.
All right, boys. Hope the sky clears soon.
Thank you.